If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Just in time, went ahead and with a line. Before I went and lost my mind, and I ain't been here long. But the bobbers in the pond going up, down, up, down, up, down. Tonight we're gonna raise a whole lot more than cane, cause there's money in the bank. And tomorrow's Saturday, so if they pass that fifth the jack this way, I turn it up, down, up, down, up, down. We're just holding it down here. Still rolling around with a bar CD. Freebird, 5 minutes deep, head bobbing up, down, up, down, up, down.
Everybody, welcome to another edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballingy, and it's great to have you here with us. Get a hold of me on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy. You can get a hold of Golf News Net on your favorite social media service at the handle Golf News Net. Find all of our work at golfnewsnet.com. Download the GNN Radio app for your Apple or Android device, or you can find us on your favorite podcasting service if you aren't already subscribed. iTunes, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, and now on Spotify, which is awesome. And you can find our TV apps for your Roku and Amazon Fire TV devices. We are presented by BetDSI.com. We have used them for a number of years for our weekly odds picks. We love their odds because you get to see the action moving in real time. They have been business-paying winners for more than 20 years. They've got an easy-to-use mobile app. It's fun to get involved. They've got everything you need for your golf wagering to help you make a little bit of money on the side. They've got in-game action. They've got matchups. They've got for the win. They've got a little bit of everything. And then beyond golf, they've got betting on politics, WWE, other sports, TV, you name it. You could probably bet on it at BetDSI. So head over to BetDSI.com, enter GolfNews25 when you sign up. You get a free $25 wager on the house. And on top of that, you're going to get a 200% bonus matched up to your initial deposit. So again, BetDSI.com, promo code GolfNews25 for that $25 free wager, which is an awesome, awesome deal. Okay, so we haven't done a podcast in a few weeks. I hope you all had a great, great, great Thanksgiving. I did. No kids got sick. No one got in a fight. It's great. And the post-Thanksgiving treat is getting to watch Tiger Woods come back. He's playing right now as we speak, as we're recording this on Thursday afternoon at the first round of the Hero World Challenge. Just turned in one under par. He made a bogey on nine exactly like he did last year. He made a birdie, his first birdie of the tournament, on the third hole, which is a par five, just like last year. He turned in three under par. Last year in the first round, which was his comeback after 16-month absence. This time around, that's one under par. I don't think that that's really all that meaningful, the difference in score. Two strokes can go one way or the other anytime in professional golf. So that's golf in general. Doesn't matter. But we did see some of the same things so far, I think, that are a reason to be slightly concerned right out the gate. Tiger looked great off the tee. I mean, he hit one on seven that was a high draw that went 340 yards, and he had 180 mile per hour ball speed, which if you're a professional and you hit it on the nut and you get a 1.5 smash factor, which is the ratio of your ball speed to your swing speed, then that means he swung the golf club anywhere from 120 to 122 miles per hour, because the maximum smash factor you can have is 1.52. So it could be a little bit lower. I guess it could be 118 to 122. But based on just the way that he hit it, in that range is pretty incredible. I mean, that's right up there with some of the fastest swing speeds on the PGA Tour. Now, that was him giving it everything. But even his drive on number one, which was to a 425-yard hole, hit a little bit of a cut. It worked out perfectly. Flew the bunker on the left, hit the fairway by an inch. So if you bet that he missed the fairway, you lost by a yard. But he outdrove Justin Thomas, who he's playing with, by 30 yards. That's crazy. That's awesome. That's good to know that he's got that in the tank. On the other side, the not-so-good stuff, that he's just not good with chipping. It's just not there yet. And which I find that kind of interesting because, obviously, Tiger's initial videos, when he came back to practicing and started getting people kind of prepared for the idea that he was going to play in this tournament, started obviously chipping and pitching. His doctor said, hey, you can go chip, pitch, and putt again. Go on out there. And that was one of his first experiments with slow-mo video this time around, him hitting a pitch shot. And people were like, oh, here he comes. Here we go. Oh, it could be. And there's still some errors there. Now, part of that is the grass is a little bit longer probably at Albany, which has dealt with a hurricane season that's been very active in the Bahamas. Some other damage to the golf course. The Bermuda's a little bit longer, grown a little bit longer than probably in his backyard, to be truthful. And that's just the reality of the situation. That doesn't necessarily excuse not being able to not chunk two chip shots in the first nine holes, but it may give you some indication of perhaps a reason why. But on the second one that he chunked on the ninth hole, he was a good inch and a half behind the ball when he made when his club head made contact with the turf, and then that led to the stub. So I'm concerned that he doesn't feel like he's got the chipping motion down. He's also probably remembering a little bit of what happened the last go-round. He did hit some squirrely chips. He's been dealing with that. He just hasn't been hitting chip shots when they matter. I mean, if you think about the amount of competitive golf Tiger Woods has played dating back to the end of 2014, think about that. He went 16 months, basically, before he made a start in this tournament last year, played four rounds. He missed the cut after two rounds at Torrey Pines, and then he played one round in clear, obvious, horrible pain in Dubai where he shot a 77 without a birdie, and then we didn't see him again until this week. So in terms of trying to deal with the competitive nerves that are totally different than just going and playing golf with your buddies, he really hasn't had a lot of experience. And I would argue actually playing in this tournament is not anywhere near the same kind of level of nerves as playing in a standard PGA Tour event, much less before you get into like a major stage, right? Because this is a hit and giggle. This is an 18-guy tournament. Tiger is the host for one, so he's got a different set of responsibilities. Two, there's no cut, so there's no fear of not getting a paycheck. Three, everybody else in this field is a top 50 player. You have to be in this tournament unless you're Tiger. And he could invite non-top 50 players under a sponsor exemption, but he's not. He will save that for himself. So he isn't really facing off against anybody who might be grinding in quite the same way that he is. And even still, the nerves of just trying to play a round where you look somewhat decent compared to the guy he's playing with today, Justin Thomas, who had a 5-win year, won a major, won the FedEx Cup, even if he doesn't remember that he won the FedEx Cup and got the bonus money. But it's different. It's just different. And so there was a lot of hype leading into this round. Just an unceaseless supply of stories about what Tiger was going to do this week, what his peers thought, how things looked. Analysis, over-analysis, under-analysis. I mean, just everything you could ask for. And then some, just a vomitorium of stuff. And none of it could predict what was really going to happen, because that's how sports work. You just don't know what's going to happen, and you don't know what you're going to get until you get out there. That's why we watch it, right? And I think that with Tiger, we basically have got close to what we got a year ago, which was a guy who seems pretty comfortable driving the golf ball. Not perfect, but pretty comfortable. Who seems a little uncomfortable over the golf ball chipping, and hit a number of good putts, but you can't expect him to just come out the gate and just drain everything. That you can't do that. That guy, first of all, that guy doesn't exist anymore. Second of all, I don't think you can really make that expectation of a guy just one round back. There's so much stuff going on, so many people around paying attention to everything that you do. So I think that you would be asking too much of a guy if that were the case. If you're trying to say, okay, he should make that 12-footer for birdie, he should make that 9-footer for par, you're assuming everything's going in like the glory days. Tiger hasn't putted really the same since 2009. And I know that's going to come to a shock, as a shock to a lot of people, but he hasn't. I know he won 5 times in 2013. He did not putt very well relative to his best in 2013. Still won 5 times, which is incredible, especially given the handicapping swing that he had from Sean Foley, which was just a tragic mess. But, and that's a testament to Tiger Woods as an athlete and what he can accomplish. But he has not been the same putter for basically a decade, and that's kind of hard to imagine, right? I mean, you hear that statistic, you know, or that thought, and you go, he hasn't putted well since 2009. Hey, next year, that's 9 years from now. This year, it's 8 years from now. If you think next June, he hasn't won a, that would be 10 years since he last won a major championship, assuming he doesn't win the Masters, which I have to throw that caveat in there, but I don't think he's going to win the Masters. So that's a long time. That's a long time since Tiger Woods, who will be 42 in 31 days time, or 30 days time, excuse me, but that's a long time. I don't care how long he was great for. He was great for 15 to 17 years, depending on how you want to define it, but you don't perform at that level for 15 to 17 years. Basically take off almost 10 years, let's say 7 years, and all of a sudden get it back, or at least not permanently. Hal Sutton kind of went through this period where he had lost it and then got it back, obviously, right around Tiger's peak years, which made for some really cool battles, but that wasn't permanent. Vijay kind of went through the wilderness a little bit in the 2000s, I guess, but he got that back and became number one in the world and had a 9-win season and won a FedEx Cup in 2008 after some years in the wilderness. Again, that wasn't permanent. He had a couple more good years and then just by nature got old and wasn't the same guy, and things changed for him a little bit. So what in the world are you supposed to expect from Tiger Woods? I don't think you should expect anything. And I think this is pretty much the same thing I said last year, so I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself. I don't think you should expect anything of Tiger Woods. I don't think there's... I laugh and adore the hype that's going on golf Twitter, if you follow golf Twitter, because that's how it works now. Golf Twitter is just all in on a Tiger Woods comeback. Anything that he does is amazing. It's nostalgic. It indicates he's coming back to full strength. All of those things. And none of that crap's true. Tiger is not going to get back to number one in the world. He's not going to be the same guy that was the best golfer I've ever seen play and probably you've ever seen play. That's not going to happen. And so if you're longing for that, you're setting yourself up for horrible failure. And terrible disappointment. That's just what it's going to feel like. So I think if you step back and say, I'm just happy that a guy who had 4 back surgeries, including a spinal fusion, is able to play golf again. And if he can do it consistently, pretty well, and healthy, that's great. If Tiger can play 10 to 15 events a year and get people, even if it's a version of nostalgia, happy over nostalgia instead of happy over seeing a dominating player, I think that's fantastic. I think that is the best possible outcome that is reasonable. You know, of course, crazy things have happened. The stars can align for 4 rounds, for 4 months, for 16 months. All those things could happen. And he could get back to number 2 in the world. Or hell, I mean, I'm saying he's not going to get to number 1, but it could happen. I mean, again, crazy stuff happens all the time, every day. So 2016 and 17 have opened my mind to the idea that literally anything can happen if you will it so and if you don't pay attention enough. So it could happen. What the hell? But I think that the reasonable outcome is to say, all right, Tiger's going to be back. He's going to play 10 to 12 events. He's going to play in the majors. He's exempt for life in three of the four majors. His exemption runs out after the 2018 U.S. Open. So he would have to start qualifying in 2019, but there's no way on the planet the USGA would not let Tiger Woods assure himself a spot at Pebble Beach at 2019 with an exemption. So he's pretty much locked in until winged foot in 2020, and then he might have to qualify for that depending on what happens. That's still three very long years from now, less than 3 years at this point for 2020 U.S. Open, but almost 3 years from now. That's supposing everything's going great for Tiger. He's healthy. Nothing goes wrong with the fusion. Nothing else is wrong like that. So I think you gotta temper your expectations a little bit if they're out there. Just be happy. Just be happy the guy's back and playing some competitive golf. And maybe use the time where you're watching him compete again as a chance to remember all of the awesome memories of Woods competitively, whether you like him personally or don't. He delivered basically two decades worth of memories for the sport, and we have those on video so we can appreciate them now and for years to come. And in the preparation for this week, the Golf Channel was showing, obviously, nonstop Tiger stuff. That's what they do. But the cool thing was they went, and they do this every once in a while when Tiger does something that's deserving of nostalgia. They showed all 14 of his major wins in chronological order. So the highlights packages from each of the presenting bodies of the majors that they produce for the major wins. It was so cool. It is so cool. I mean, if they just played that in a loop on days when they weren't airing tournament golf, I would be so happy if they did it for him, Jack, Arnie, Hogan, Player, go down the line of the all-time greats, Phil. Just did that, like multi-hour blocks of major highlight packages from the greatest majors ever played, from the greatest players to ever live. It would be the coolest channel in the world. It would be something people would buy a subscription to stream, I think. If I had the rights to do it, that's exactly what I would do. I would put it on our Golf News Net channels, and it would just be the coolest thing. But alas, we don't. Golf Channel has those rights, unfortunately. So this is a cool week for nostalgia. It's a cool week, an opportunity to see where Tiger Woods is and maybe get a glimpse of where he's going. Woods has said himself he doesn't know what's next. He's just going to try and get an idea this week of where he is and what that might mean for what he has to work on, a schedule for next year and things like that. I think that's great. And I think that's the right attitude to take. I think he expressed a relief that was genuine that he's not on pain medication for two reasons. One, because he had to check into rehab because he got addicted to it. And two, because his back pain originally was so bad in the first place that he felt the need to shove pills down his throat just to get through the day. And both of those things aren't happening now. That's fantastic. So whatever it means going forward, I hope it means that he gets to play a regular schedule, whatever that means for him, whatever that he wants that to be. He's got a PGA Tour membership for life. He's in three of the four majors for the rest of his life. He can figure that out for himself. He's a big boy, almost 42. But Tiger's back. Get hyped. Stay hyped. Whatever. Don't get hyped. But appreciate what he accomplished. And maybe even appreciate that he got back to this point at all. All right, we're going to go and take a break, and we'll be right back.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to the second half of the program. We appreciate you listening and subscribing to the show. The other thing I wanted to talk about is something we touched on our Two Off the First video podcast and earlier in the week, and that was the idea that a huge shakeup is coming to the PGA Tour schedule. And John Feinstein, who I'm sure you are aware of, if you're listening to the show, you're probably somewhat tuned into golf. But if you're not, John Feinstein is one of the best-selling sports authors of all time, great columnist, works for Golf Channel, hosts a radio program for SiriusXM PGA Tour Radio. And on that show, his SiriusXM show called Good Walk Spoiled, which is named after, of course, one of his books, he said that he has sources telling him there's a big shakeup coming, not only in terms of moving the players back to March and the PGA from August to May, but on top of that, there will be a huge shakeup in August and, well, technically June, too. He said that he had heard from sources Bridgestone will not continue as sponsor of the WGC Bridgestone Invitational, which has been for a number of years now with the one-off of the Olympics in 2016, the lead-in to the PGA Championship. And obviously with the PGA Championship moving dates, that would no longer be the case if it were still to be played in August. And Feinstein reports his source tells him Bridgestone will get out of that contract, which ends next year. So that event will go away from Firestone after some 65 years, perhaps, of hosting PGA Tour events. I know it's about 60 to 65 years. And suburban Cleveland, Akron, Ohio won't have that event anymore. So what will replace the WGC, because they have to have four, otherwise it feels like a failure, what they plan to do, according to Feinstein and his sources, FedEx, as part of their negotiation to re-up a sponsor of the FedEx Cup, got the PGA Tour to agree to let them turn their event in Memphis, where they're headquartered, the FedEx St. Jude Classic, into a World Golf Championships event. So instead of the WGC Bridgestone Invitational, it would be the WGC FedEx Classic, probably FedEx Invitational, I imagine. They would probably still benefit St. Jude, of course, because that's huge in Memphis and it's an amazing place. But they would probably change the name a little bit to streamline it. It's a little bit more interesting sounding than the Mexico Championship, but alas. So that would mean then not that the WGC would move from August to June, but that the Memphis tournament would move from June, which is routinely the week before the U.S. Open, they would move that to August. So that's very intriguing, because that sets up obviously a big change in the schedule at that point. You would move Memphis from the week prior to the U.S. Open to a critical point in August in terms of the PGA Tour schedule. But I don't know if you've been in Tennessee in the summertime, especially in August, but it's pretty damn hot. So Memphis in August sounds pretty damn hot. What are you going to do? I guess there's nothing you can do. If that's what FedEx gets, that's what FedEx gets. Enjoy playing TPC Southwind or someplace else for a WGC title and free money in 105-degree temperatures. Enjoy it all. And just mind the swamp ass. So we've got that. So that sets up an interesting change for the U.S. Open, right? Because with the U.S. Open sectional qualifier being based in Memphis for so many years now, because the PGA Tour event is there starting on Thursday, that qualifier has to move, because the PGA Tour has done its best to try to create two U.S. Open qualifiers for high-level professional players, namely PGA Tour, Web.com Tour, and I guess even European Tour players to an extent who are over here. One the day after, you know, they're all on the same day, but one in Columbus, Ohio after the Memorial Tournament, so a lot of guys can stay over and in Ohio and continue their quest to the U.S. Open if they play in the Memorial Tournament, or they could go fly into Memphis, either on Sunday, or if they miss the cut, I guess on Friday, then they could go play that tournament in the Memphis area, then just go sidle right over to TPC Southwind and play in that tournament. And then they would basically get two cracks at qualifying for the U.S. Open, because if they didn't get through the 36-hole sectional qualifier, they could conceivably get in if they got into the top 60 in the world ranking the week prior to the U.S. Open. So if you won the FedEx St. Jude Classic, there was at least a chance, depending on your ranking, that you could move up that far. You could get into the U.S. Open. Now that's going to change. So which tournament will be the week prior to the U.S. Open, and will the USGA respond in kind with having a U.S. Open sectional qualifier in that area on that Monday? I think that they would, unless they totally change their strategy, which in and of itself would be fascinating. So that's got to change. Then on top of that, you have to figure out, okay, you got to figure out what tournament that's going to be in June. Well, what options do you have? Which ones would want to move to that date? I don't think everyone wants to be the week prior to a major or the week after a major, even though a number of tournaments have made that work for them. Would a Travelers Championship want to be the week prior to the U.S. Open instead of the week after? Maybe that would take the spot. Do we need a new tournament? Would you take some of the second portion of the Texas swing? So there are four events on the PGA Tour right now played in Texas. Houston and San Antonio are typically grouped together. And then you've got the Texas two-step of Colonial and the Byron Nelson in back-to-back weeks. You've got the Nelson usually first and then Colonial. Well, right now, we don't know if Colonial's even going to be on the PGA Tour schedule in 2018, much less in 2019, because Dean and DeLuca, the food people, the special food market or whatever that got in as the title sponsor a couple of years ago, has said they're probably not going to be the title sponsor. They have to write down a bunch of debt. They're expanding. They're kind of in trouble, to be honest with you. And so they can't pay that money to Colonial, which then puts that money forward to the PGA Tour as raised together to put on this invitational tournament. Their structure is a little bit different because the PGA Tour doesn't own the event. So it's a little bit different. So the PGA Tour has said to the folks at Colonial Country Club, I think the deadline is tomorrow, December 1st. You need to raise the money for this tournament, the $10 to $11 million it takes between purse and other sponsorships required, or we're not going to put you on the schedule for 2018. We're going to rip you off. So if that's the case, then all of a sudden, and this is kind of a catastrophic scenario, right? I hope that Colonial does not go anywhere. But if Colonial doesn't get its act figured out and they fall off the schedule, meanwhile you've got Houston, which does not have a title sponsor and does not seem to have one in the offing since Shell walked away after, 25 or 30 years as title sponsor, you could lose Colonial and Houston in a heartbeat. They could be gone off the schedule by 2019. So would you have the Byron Nelson remain in May and bring San Antonio into May to kind of fill that schedule gap left by the Players' Championship leaving, Colonial being gone potentially, and then work all that around the PGA Championship? Would you do that? I don't know. Again, do you need another tournament? That's very hard to predict. And I don't see new tournaments in the offing. There's been a move from the Barbasol Championship from Alabama to Kentucky. So that's an interesting change. It seems like there's a lot of moving around on the PGA Tour schedule already that is, if you read between the lines, can be anticipated. And then you've got this to throw into it. And then on top of that, because the PGA Tour wants to end their season sooner, they want to reduce the playoffs from 4 to 3 events. They want to have it done by Labor Day. So by clearing out some tournaments, they can make that more easily a possibility. So maybe you could say to Greenbrier, you can either be in the fall or you can be in May. You pick. They take that. Or they take the week before the U.S. Open in June. That would be pretty cool for them if they ran a U.S. Open qualifier at the Greenbrier every year. That would be something that they would fawn over at Greenbrier. Jim Justice, who's the governor of West Virginia, he's not running the resort right now. His wife, Dr. Jill Justice, is. But he owns the resort still. So he could have that puffed out chest moment. Not only do we have a PGA Tour event, we also have a U.S. Open qualifier every year. So that would be something that could be a draw for his resort. Why wouldn't he do that? Maybe he takes that spot instead of going to the fall. Meanwhile, you've got Bridgestone that says, we don't want to sponsor the WGC event, but we do want to have a fall series event or a fall event as part of the Asia swing, which is growing by the year. We already have events in South Korea, China, Malaysia. That list is going to continue to grow. We could have 4 or 5 Asia swing events. There's another potential disruption there because the head of golf sponsorship and sports sponsorship for HSBC, Giles Morgan, has left the company. So all of a sudden, HSBC's the guy that was kind of puffing out golf as a major vehicle for HSBC, who, by the way, had to do a lot of convincing the last time that they re-upped for this sponsorship, as well as what they're doing in Abu Dhabi, that could be a blow-up. They could take that WGC and throw it to hell. So maybe WGC in China's gone. Well, guess what's going to slip in there? Could be a Bridgestone Invitational in Japan. Maybe that's the WGC. Maybe they're taking their WGC from Ohio and they're moving it to Japan. Why not, right? I mean, Bridgestone's based in Japan. They could do that. So maybe that's what happens. There is a lot going on with this schedule that no one seems to really be talking about yet. But the PGA Tour schedule in 2019 for the 18-19 season is going to look dramatically different. Dramatically different. And that's just 5 or 6 events that could change. It could end up being 8 or 9 all told that could change. Either dates, sponsorships, go away entirely, move continents. All of those things could happen. No one's talking about it yet. Get out in front of it. Kind of read between the lines of these sponsorship things. And you're seeing a huge change that's coming to the PGA Tour. I can't explain why. I can take a guess why. I think part of it is because sponsorship has become so expensive on the PGA Tour. It's very difficult for a lot of companies to invest $7 to $11 to $12 million for 1 week on the PGA Tour schedule when they can use that marketing budget to spread out that investment not only across geographies, but time of year. And that's going to be a looming issue, I believe, for the PGA Tour in the years to come, as sports sponsorship, sports rights, all of those things kind of reestablish a base value moving forward in a world where people are cutting cable, where fewer people are paying $8 a month to ESPN and 35 cents a month to Golf Channel for stuff that they don't watch. Just think about that. I mean, they're about 10 years ago, 100 million people were paying $6 or $7 a month to ESPN, and maybe at their best night, 10 million people would watch a Monday night football game. So 90 million homes were paying for ESPN that didn't ever watch it. And now they've lost 10 million homes. So that means over a space of time, which is continuing, it's not stopping. So that means over time for ESPN in particular, if you paid $7 to $9 a month to them, and you're going to start paying $8 and change them next year. So looking forward, they have lost $88 million in change a month from subscribers who have killed off cable. That's insane. Golf Channel is not in quite the same boat, but it's getting close because Golf Channel is owned by Comcast, and Comcast obviously puts its channels, and they own like 17 or 18 channels. They put those on their cable system for pretty much everybody because they pay themselves twice. You pay them to have cable service, and then you pay them as part of that to also have the channel. So they make money off of you basically twice. Or you could say they kind of keep 100% of the money for those things. So they have lost 500,000 subscribers just in the last 3 months for Golf Channel. 500,000 of them. So obviously you're not paying the same amount of money every year to Golf Channel as you do to ESPN, but that's a $2 million change, a $2 million annual hit. And they've lost somewhere in the area of 4 million subscribers. So they're causing themselves about $16 million worth of loss every year because of people cutting cable. Well, what's that mean? That means something for the PGA Tour's next television contract in the 2020s with both NBC and Golf Channel, as well as CBS, because they're the other network partner. So they're going to negotiate based off of NBC, which airs fewer events. So CBS is probably going to get a discount because they agree to air more events, including some of the not as good events. And that means something for the PGA Tour. All of this stuff is connected. All of it is connected. How you view golf is connected. All of it. So it's something to keep track of. I know it doesn't sound as sexy, but the business of the PGA Tour is going to change in a substantial way in the next few years. And no one really knows how it's all going to work out quite yet. And part of that relies on you. How much you watch, where you watch, whether you watch Golf Channel, PGA Tour Live, all those things. But some big changes are coming, and it's going to be fascinating. We're going to keep track of it as best we can. All right, that's going to do it for us this week on the show. Thanks so much for listening to us. If you do listen to us through iTunes, please give us a 5-star review on the podcast app or on iTunes. Just go to our show, search for the 19th Hole Golf Show, give us a 5-star review. We would love you forever. And we'll answer your comments if you put a 5-star review and some comments. So there's some motivation, I guess, to do that. If not, just keep listening to the show. Tell a friend about us. We always appreciate the opportunity to reach more people. We've always appreciated your support. We will probably do one more show, maybe two this year, and then we'll go ahead and take a break for the holiday season, Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Festivus, all that stuff, and then we will come back after probably one more show in January. We will start up again with the PGA Tour calendar and the calendar turn to 2018, the Century Tournament of Champions. We'll get things started again. And we'll dig in just like we always have. So until the next show, which will probably be our final show of 2017, thanks so much for listening. I'm Ryan Ballingy, and we'll talk to you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.